Devices Radio Network.
Hey, what's going on, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, Dave and I have a news story. Dude was injecting semen to control his back pain. Swear to God, we're going to talk about that here. Plus, we have a bunch of listener questions. BPC 157, oral versus nasal versus injectable administration. Growth hormone, and can it change your prolactin levels? Is it possible that someone could grow better with a test-only cycle versus adding in DECA or TREN or EQ? And we talk about strategies for adding in carbs in a mass gaining phase. All that and much more happening right now on Drugs and Stuff. I've got, I can't even call this drugs in the news, Dave. I don't even know if I can, but I guess I'll say, Dave, I've got a drugs in the news for us here. And this is something I sent you over last week. I think this falls under the category of don't try this at home, kids. This is an actual a paper from a journal in Ireland. The title of it is Seemingly Harmless Back Pain, an unusual presentation of subcutaneous abscess. A 33-year-old man was seen complaining of severe sudden onset low back pain. He reported lifting a heavy steel object 3 days prior, and his symptoms had progressed ever since. The gentleman had a history of chronic low back pain. Through a physical exam of his upper and lower limbs, revealed, let's see, I don't know what this word is. I don't even know what that word is, Dave. It's a big long word. There's like four syllables. Epiphomatous. Let's see. I'm just gonna skip that word. Anyways, it appears it was like an abscess. This is, I think, a right. Big word for abscess is my guess.
Okay.
The patient disclosed that he had intravenously injected his own semen as a method to treat back pain.
Well, they obviously aren't intravenous it because he'd have been dumping it into a vein, but he's IM'd it then.
He had devised this cure independent of any medical advice. Upon further interrogation of this alternative therapy, he revealed he had injected one monthly dose of semen for 18 consecutive months using a hypodermic needle, which had been purchased online. Upon this occasion, the patient had injected three doses of semen intravenously and intramuscularly.
So he's putting semen into his vein.
Yeah. And apparently missing, too. Yeah, this is a thing. This is in an Irish journal.
So where was this? This guy was in Ireland.
Yeah, I wonder if Dean knows him. It's not a big country.
I don't think he'd want to know him.
No. Where does this come from? Why? How does this happen? Where's your training? I can't understand like where you start with I have back pain and you end with I'm going to inject some sperms.
No. I give up. I want to get off. I'm sorry. I can't cope with this planet anymore.
Oof. Let's see. I think they have. You know what? I won't be able to add it to the live feed, but for the YouTube viewers, I will add a picture of his very swollen forearm. He has a very swollen forearm, just full of cum, basically, is what it looks like.
I am surprised he hasn't actually killed himself in or scores a really problem, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
It looks like
there you go, Scott. That's the secret to big forearms, injecting semen.
Yeah. I mean, it is. He has like quite a sight-enhanced look. I mean, as long as you don't care about the fact that it's red, it's cellulitis is what it says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just nuts. That is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. Huh.
Saying that, I do know a guy that used to drink his piss every morning. He swore by it.
You're kidding me. I've heard of people, like fighters, doing that.
Yeah, he used to drink his piss every morning. He swore by it.
No kidding.
And he said he genuinely felt good for it.
Huh. It says the patient was immediately commenced on intravenous antimicrobial treatment after seeking advice regarding appropriate cover.
And then the next day he was sent to the nut house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Try this jacket on, sir. It fastens at the back.
Whew.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers. But, you know, I mean, people do stupid shit.
Yeah.
And I think we've probably done stupid shit in this time.
I've never done that.
No, maybe not that, but, you know, I mean, I bet there are people in this world that have done some pretty crazy shit when it comes to in the pursuit of muscle growth because they thought it might help.
Listen, here's a moral of the story. If you feel bad about some mistakes you've made in your life, you can look to this guy and you might feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe this one.
Huh. Brings a whole new terminology to the term spunk bucket, doesn't it?
So, here's the deal. What did he say, 18 months he had been doing this? I mean, was it working? Because, I mean, I feel like if your back's been hurting for there's a certain point within that 18-month window where you say to yourself, like, hey, maybe I should go to a doctor. Hey, maybe injecting the semen isn't working as good as I thought it was going to.
I would actually like to throw something out to the audience and see if they're brave enough to answer this.
Have you injected semen?
No. Sorry, that's just really tickled me today. What's the craziest, stupidest, maddest thing you've done in the pursuit of muscle growth?
Do you think they'll tell us?
I don't know. Probably not, because unfortunately they would have to do it through a profile, which will give them their name. We promise complete anonymity when it comes to discussing what the messages are sent in. Oh, yeah. But what is the stupidest thing you've done in order to try and gain muscle?
And if you're going to post under your own profile, if you like, you can tell us the stupidest thing your friend did.
Yes, and we won't publicize who it's from. We won't say any names at all.
I like that.
But I bet there's some doozies out there. Yeah. Do you remember Cybergenics?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, spent hundreds of pounds on Cybergenics to get absolutely fucking nowhere. And that had stuff like train at 5 o'clock in the morning with no food for 4 days and all sorts of weird and wonderful shit in it, didn't it?
Yeah. But, yeah. Did you follow that?
No, you know, I couldn't afford, but I used to genuinely, this is how sad I was at the time, stand outside the supplement shop and stare through the window at the box.
Dude, it's so funny because I was going to tell you the same thing. I have a friend that used it. I couldn't afford it either, man. That was a lot of money.
It was a lot of money, was that system.
Yeah, my friend Vijay, it was Vijay Puri from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. He said he nagged his parents and they bought it for him.
That's some good parents.
Yeah, yeah. Or some good nagging, really persuasive.
I used to stand outside the supplement shop and just stare at it and dream.
Yeah? Like, if only I had Cybergenics, I would look like that guy.
I remember saving up and going to buy liver tablets and thinking that I was going to be massive 2 weeks later because I'd taken these liver tablets.
Yeah, yeah. Now I can finally put all the pieces together. What's the dumbest thing you can think of that you've done?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. I, many, many moons ago, before SEOs were popular and anyone had really heard anything about them, okay, yeah. I was given a vial of an SEO. It may have been Synthol, it may have been another form, I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
And I was told that inject this and it creates site growth. It causes your muscles to grow purely from injecting it.
Okay.
Right. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know it was an SEO. I didn't know how it worked or anything about it. As far as I knew, this was an anabolic substance that if you injected into a muscle, it made it grow.
Sure.
And at the time, I was obsessed with having absolute monstrous calves.
Really?
So I think I put something like 3, 4, or 5 mil in each calf.
Holy crap. Oh, my God.
One shot. I only ever did one shot. I couldn't fucking walk, stand, or do anything for about a week.
Yeah.
I was in absolute agony, and I never touched it again. And it wasn't till literally sort of like 8, 10 years later, I actually found out what it was.
Yeah? What was it?
It was synth oil.
Oh, it was synth oil.
Yeah, but at the time, I didn't know what it was. I thought this was a steroid.
Yeah,
I had no idea what it was. So it was only 8, 10 years later, I found out it was synthol.
Yeah.
But I did one shot in each calf, never touched it again, threw it in the fucking bin. I said, fuck that, that's fucking far too painful. And I say about 8, 10 years later, I found out it was synthol that I'd used. That's what it was. And that's when synthol first started coming out and people started knowing. But well, no, it'd been, actually, it'd probably been nearer 20 years later, 15 years later.
Wow.
But at the time, I just had no idea what it was, and I absolutely crippled myself for a week.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I bet. I've heard stories of people doing calf injections, even with like just regular gear, and that they just can't walk after that.
Oh, I used to regularly inject my calves with gear.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I think the worst sight I've ever done for pain was probably a lat shot.
Really? I find it just in general or one particular lat shot?
It was just one particular one. I must have just hit it in a bad spot. And that hurt for ages.
I found for me, I was doing very frequent injections during the contest prep. This is a long time ago now. And that's when I discovered lats and as a site. And when I discovered them, I just remember being like, oh, hey, there's no scar tissue here. This is smooth as butter, you know, comparatively. I always had good success with them, but they're kind of tricky to try to, you know, get your body around to the, you know.
Well, what I decided was, I decided that even if it was just localized swelling, that if I could generate some discomfort in the lower lat right near the insertion point.
Oh.
That it would be easier to focus on that area when I was training and as a rule get a better mind connection and help develop that because I've got quite high inserts. So it would help fill out as much as I could in that insertion point.
Yeah.
Because I'd be connected to it through the pain.
Which there's a reality to that.
Yeah. It wasn't that I was expecting site growth, but I was expecting a better brain connection to that area when I trained it.
Yeah.
They fucking hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hurt for a long time.
Because you have to bury a shot, you know, deep into the belly of a muscle. I have to imagine that was kind of like probably close to the surface and off center a little. That was probably not good.
That was unpleasant. But I mean, when I used to sight my calves, I used to go in from the side.
Okay.
So my calf is probably at the time was probably about that. The actual, if you looked at it from the side.
Yeah.
It was a slab about that thick.
Uh-huh.
So rather than go in, because you tended to go through and go into the underlying muscle, I used to go in underneath and slide up into the muscle that way.
Whew.
So it was dead center calf, but it was gone in from the edge, from the side.
Huh.
But yeah, I actually, daft as it sounds, the one muscle I couldn't inject was quad.
No kidding.
Hurt like fuck.
Yeah. It's a real tight muscle. The fibers are different in your quads, aren't they?
Oh, no. Couldn't stand. Definitely not test. Could never put. Get away with Deca, but I couldn't put test in my legs.
Huh. No kidding.
I always struggled with my arms as well. I always found my glutes used to lump up and always had problems with my glutes, which is why I generally just sighted everywhere else.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah. So that would probably be my stupidest thing I've done in bodybuilding.
I'm trying to think of anything. I know I've done a lot of stupid stuff. I can't think of like one that's extremely funny at the moment. The only thing I can think of is I was given Retin A, which is topical retinoid, and it was real powerful, and I had acne on my shoulders. So I was using it for that. And then I read that, okay, Retin A is also really good for the quality, like the quality of keeping your skin youthful. And this stuff was expensive. My insurance was covering it. And I thought to myself, oh, well, I'll just put this on my face too. And it'll be like, you know, it'll like, this will keep me young for ages. And at the time, man, my skin was really good too. I didn't have any issues, no acne on my face, but I had a negative reaction to it. And my face started breaking out. And when I say breaking out, Dave, it was breaking out like a rash. It wasn't just like acne. It was like a rash. But what I knew from retinoids is that it's probably going to get a little worse before it gets better.
So I carried on.
Kept putting it on. Dude, it ruined my skin. Like for a long, it looks better now. But man, it took like seriously a decade for my skin to come back around to even look like remotely okay. It was, and I'll tell you, man, I mean, in all honesty, it made me realize how much acne can affect your sense of well-being and depression and all that kind of stuff, you know?
I mean, I've not personally, but I have heard of people that have used Accutane to solve very bad back acne.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously Accutane also has that horrible side effect of depressive like qualities anyway.
Yes, yeah.
And the combination, I mean, these are people whose back knee so bad that they are struggling to lie on their backs because they're so painful. And they've ended up taking their own lives.
Oh,
with the combination of the drug and the impact of being so bad.
Whew.
I remember a girl when I was a teenager, friend of mine, Alison, and she had eczema.
Yeah.
And she was covered from here to here constantly. Never, ever wore any sort of clothing that would reveal anything higher than her. That's how much it affected her.
Yeah.
And she got one steroid cycle a year from the doctor so that it would clear up so she could go on holiday and wear a bikini. And they did that once a year for her.
Oh, jeez. She wasn't allowed to use that stuff year-round, huh?
Now, I don't know what the reasoning behind was. I mean, I was only 13, 14, 15, but I do remember her telling me that she got this steroid cycle from the doctors once a year.
Okay.
So that she could go on holiday and actually take her top off on holiday. Otherwise, she would not ever show a bare arm because of the eczema.
Huh. Gotcha.
So you can imagine how impacting that is on somebody when they have to live a life like that because they are so conscious of how they appear.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, listen. Let's take a really quick break. We'll come back, and we have a bunch of listener questions. Hey, what's up, guys? Scott here, and I want to take a really brief pause from this episode to shout out our new great sponsor, Azoth. Now, first of all, guys, I want to say that I only bring in companies that I truly, truly do believe in. You know, I believe in TrueNutrition.com, and I believe in GetAzoth.com. This is a total nootropic product. They've sponsored BNR, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, for a number of years now. I'm super familiar with it. I've watched the company grow, and I've watched Prady do great things with it. And listen, here's my story. You know, in all honesty, I feel like I fucked up in the early part of my life, and I didn't get the things done that I should have done earlier on. And I'm trying to make up for that now, honestly. You know, I'm trying to be the best person I can and help people and, you know, try to put a retirement together for myself. I'm totally self-employed between podcasting full-time and nutrition coaching. My life is pretty demanding, and that's the way that I want to live it. I want to get the most I can out of life, and I want to have fun doing it. And if you can't tell, guys, I am having a lot of fun with this. By the way, I'm grateful for you guys listening and watching all the shows. Anyway, getazoth.com. I feel that my attention and my focus is increased when I use this. At the same time, I don't get the anxiety that goes along with a lot of stimulants. If you haven't tried a nootropic, this is the place that I would suggest going. Start out with these guys and let me know what you think. I've got links in the show descriptions. And if you haven't tried it, Prady even has an option to get a bottle for free. So it'll be no cost to you. You can see what it's all about. Either way, guys, check out getazoth.com. And let me know what you think, because I found that it's a fantastic product. Also, Prady and I are going to be doing some short segments that we'll be releasing through Think Big. This was my idea because he's happy to help educate people about what nootropics are and about what the benefits are. So each little segment, we're going to talk about a different ingredient. I think that'll be a great fit for the YouTube format. All right, guys, let's get back to the programming.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. And Dave, we have listener questions, people that are watching on the live feed. We'll get to those today. And we have some questions that have been written in. Okay, so we have this gentleman who has been, he's been getting gyno whenever he uses growth hormone. First of all, this is a topic I don't think we've talked about before. I know it's a thing. I know it can happen. What's the deal? You know, I mean, traditionally we think gyno, we think, you know, high conversion of, you know, test to estrogen, aromatization. This is a different mechanism, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on this in the past, that prolactin-based gyno is very, very rare in people that have pituitary issues or have hyperlactin naturally. It's generally not really considered medically, but we see plenty of people who have gyno symptoms and then add in cabergoline and those gyno symptoms reduce.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence to support that, you know, that there are actions going on between prolactin and gyno, and obviously growth hormone will raise prolactin levels. There is a direct mechanism there with growth hormone elevating prolactin. So it stands to reason that if he's having gyno-related symptoms that and he's hormone, that could be the route of going there. I don't really know much more about it than that. I've looked into prolactin and gyno several times, and I can't really find much in the way of studies to sort of support it. It because people with prolactinemia don't generally get gyno, it's not something that medically looks like it's been really looked at much. So I need to go back into one of my YouTube channels and have a listen to one of my own videos. I do remember doing a video on this, and there was some pointers that I made out in that video about what happens. But now I can't remember them for the love of money. I'll have to have a look. I will try and remember to revisit that for next week.
Okay. We may have some questions at the last YouTube video. I will check there. What about this is one here that we have from live right now. Dave's opinion on IGF-LR3 protocols and dosage.
There are peptides out there that are very efficient, very good at what they do. Most of the growth hormone secretors work quite well. Obviously, most of us are familiar with BPC, and TB is working very, very well.
Okay.
I am not a fan of the IGF.
No.
No, I just don't think they get it high enough. My experience with IGF peptides and the experience of people that I've worked with or talked to or discussed the subject, the answer is all very much similar. Feel nice and full within the muscle at which it's sited, but beyond that, no growth whatsoever. When you look at IGF-1 in its pharma form, so you look at Increlex, and you look at the dosing of Increlex, the levels that are required medicinally to cause muscular growth in someone that's suffering from a muscle wastage disease or issues of that nature, they're huge.
Yeah,
they are absolutely monstrous, and way above what you see anyone in bodybuilding using, and that's generally because of the cost. You would be spending literally hundreds a day, in order to dose correctly when you look at the medicinal doses of IGF-1, and the peptides just don't come anywhere near.
Look, what are we talking dose wise? If you can recall offhand, medical use for Increlex.
I think it's 0.04 micrograms per kilo.
Okay.
Twice a day.
So how many micrograms per kilo?
I think it's 0.04.
What did you say? 0.04?
0.04.
See, I didn't even know. I'm not even trying to. I wasn't even trying to. I didn't even know what that meant.
I'll tell you exactly what it is because I've got the bloody dose in here.
Let me ask, while Dave's looking that up, I'm going to take a poll here. Did anybody else not know what a nort was? I didn't know what a nort was. Dave's jumping down my throat today.
Honestly, I can't work with this man anymore. Anyone out there wants to host a podcast? Please do, for my own sanity.
For Dave.
I can't work with this man.
Nort. What's a nort?
Nort. Zero.
Then why don't you say zero?
Because I speak English, not Americanese.
Hey, say the word missile. I want to hear how it sounds.
Missile.
You do. You say missile. You pronounce missile. The I. Yeah.
Well, that's because there's an I in there.
We talked about that in another podcast. I pronounce it just missile, like L-E almost. There's no I-L-E in my vocabulary.
No, you're just wrong.
Apparently.
American. Yeah, just wrong. American.
Now, I know, because here's what I've heard. I've heard doses as low as 20 micrograms of IGF. More likely, though, people I think are using like 50 to 100 micrograms, and they'll do that for a few weeks on, then a few weeks off. And I'd say 100 is on the high end for IGF-LR3. I'm sure people have used it higher. I know there's issues that you can eventually create like a desensitization to it. So that's what people are afraid of.
Yeah, but I just don't think dosing is anywhere near high enough, but I can't find what I'm bloody looking for now, which is annoying me.
Ooh. Well, while you're looking at that, also, Scott Stevenson chimed in, and he said prolactin is so named because it promotes lactation and readies the mammary gland for milk letting.
That's a nice little bit of...
Makes sense that it would cause breast tissue development in the right environment otherwise. Estrogen, perhaps IGF-1, which can be elevated with GH, of course.
Right, yes. So the dosing for Increlex is 0.04 of a microgram to 0.08.
So what does that translate, say, to a 200-pound guy?
I'll tell you. Just hang on.
All right.
So 40 to 80 micrograms per kilo.
Per kilo. And guys are using like 40 to 100 micrograms a day.
No, per kilo.
I know, but I'm saying like in the black market for bodybuilding.
But this is Increlex. So you're talking for a 100 kilo male, so a 220 pound man.
Yeah.
You are talking 4 to 8 milligrams a day.
Wow. And we buy it like 1 milligram at a time for IGF-1, LR3.
Yeah, but this is Increlex, so obviously it's pharma.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the dosing. that's the level it requires to create non-stimulated muscular growth.
That's crazy.
So I don't, this is why arguments always being the same with people using Increlics and stuff. You've got to have deep pockets to be able to afford to dose this at anything that's going to be anywhere near really world effective.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm not a fan of the peptides. I just, all I see from the peptides is a bit of muscle fullness and nothing particularly productive.
Yeah.
And I think in the big picture of things, there are far more important things that will yield far more effective results than pissing about with microdosing and time dosings for IGF injections.
Fair enough.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, fair enough. I can tell you that I know a lot of the pros that I know, that they aren't a lot of them. Most of them, they never, I put it this way. I've never met one pro that's told me, you know what the difference maker was? It was the IGF.
No.
You know,
I do think there's certain pros that may have administrated IGF in the form of light Increlics.
Absolutely.
Really high doses. And my understanding that when you do run it at those sort of doses, you can, it can be quite painful.
Really? I think we both know a couple guys that have done that.
It can be particularly painful, and it's not a pleasant experience, but you will yield impressive results off it. But, you know, I'm not sure on the last time I saw any Increlics, it was in the region of about 240-pound a vial.
Wow.
And a vial is, what's a vial? I've got a vial here. A vial is 10 milligrams per mil, and 4 mil in a. So you've got 40 milligrams in a vial. But I've since seen people quote nigh on £1,000 for that.
Wow.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I genuinely don't know what the current pricing is on it. But even at that, that would be, for me, 150 kilo. What am I looking at? I'm looking at 12 milligrams a day.
So a vial every 3 days.
Just 3 days, yeah. So even if I was getting it as cheap, if 240 was a relatively correct price, I'm going through £240 every 3 days.
Yeah.
It's nearly, you know, you're touching £1,000 a week.
That's a lot of money, man.
It is a lot of money.
Hey, while we're talking about peptides, we had someone else who wrote in. They were talking about, let's see, what was it? BPC 157. Now, what he had shown me was a company that is producing an oral capsule of BPC. I had an issue with this. So here's my thought. Now, I don't remember what the dosing was. What I've seen, though, Dave, I wanted to address this to him, since we were just about to record the show when he sent this over. These products, this is dosed at, you had to take like a few tabs a day to equal one dose, and one dose was 500 micrograms. Now, on average, people are injecting around, you know, 250 to 500 micrograms per shot. But you need a lot more for it to be orally available. It sounds like a ripoff to me, man. Like, would you think, I mean, I don't know, man. It just seems like a ripoff. What do you think?
My understanding, it is quite resilient as a chemical. So I'm not sure how much stomach situation would cause damage to the actual compound itself. But you've still got that issue of it being one of the least efficient ways of absorbing a chemical.
Yeah.
If it was sublingual, then maybe its bioavailability is going to be increased.
Okay.
But I think from an administration point of view, it's not the most effective. And I don't really see why you would choose oral over injectable, particularly when you're talking insulin injections. You're not talking, you know, it's not like you're firing a green in there, is it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I appreciate that people have phobias of needles and such like, but it's not exactly a painful injection, isn't an insulin injection. I just seems to be a very unproductive and potentially wasteful way of administrating the drug.
Yeah, that's the way I felt too. I was looking here right now. I don't see actual dosing protocol, but I want to say I've heard, you know, up to like 2 milligrams, you know, or so orally. Don't quote me on that, anybody. You know, I'm sure if you were really interested, you could find the information. But if you can, I don't know. In my experience too, and I think we have talked about this before, Dave, you agreed that I've experimented with it at a much higher dose than what we see online. Like a lot of times they say 250 micrograms twice a day. I've done closer to more like a milligram. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I found that to be more effective. Where have you found it to be an effective drug or peptide?
Yeah, I'm up there with the higher doses myself as well, and I prefer the higher doses. The problem is then it does become costly, but
yeah,
you know, I'm in the milligrams definitely. Both daily and obviously it's often paired with TB. And TB, I'm looking in the 10 plus milligrams a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But at those doses, I find it effective. I've found the lower doses, not as much. And I know that there's some debate over sighting with BPC. But I do find that sighting has definitely improved its effectiveness much more than trying to put it in anywhere and just let it go systematic.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't tell personally. Like, I wouldn't argue against you on that one. I couldn't tell personally if I felt an effect or not beneficially by putting it near the site. But, you know, I'd be curious to hear anybody who's had GI issues, because I know they've been using it for people that have like IBS and stuff. I'd be curious to hear anybody, because obviously it brings down inflammation, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So it could be beneficial for digestive inflammation. I mean, I know it's produced in the gut.
It's there's been some interesting work done with Crohn's disease, I believe.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be and using it as a treatment for Crohn's disease, and I believe it's been very successful.
Huh. Interesting.
Hmm.
All right. We had one here about cholesterol. Now, this is kind of a longer question, so bear with me. And I haven't read through the whole thing yet. Hi, Scott. I had some blood work done and wanted to bounce it off of Dave Crossland and you. My total cholesterol went from 160 to 195. As I went from plant-based to whey protein to a more normal bodybuilding diet with red meat twice a week, my HDL has gone from 21 to 29 using Dante's protocol of citrus bergamot. My father's side of the family has genetically low HDL. All this is when I'm not using anything. I've never used gear, but I usually use a prohormone to put a little more size on for the summer. I take one Andro a day for 16 weeks. After learning a lot from advices, I'm a little nervous in how this may affect my blood levels. Does a small dose of prohormone affect lipids like orals?
Yes.
Okay. I know the answer is to do bloods in August when I'm getting off, but appreciate the feedback. I'm 5'8", 170 pounds, 8% body fat, tested with calipers. So I'm not huge by any means. I thought I was being conservative, but now I'm a little nervous. Appreciate the advice. Then he has a follow-up. He says, as a follow-up question, I also messaged Dante, and he recommended getting my test levels checked and pursuing TRT. He says test would be safer, and I could maintain higher test levels all the time versus using Andro for small periods, messing up my blood, and then coming back down. I don't know much about TRT, so maybe you and Dave could talk about the process of getting started, what to expect, and some details of long-term longevity. I asked him how old he was. He said he's 38. He had his test checked when he was 26 and had some issues when he was first married. I remember that it being low, but I can't remember how low.
The first thing is, those cholesterol levels mean nothing to me because they're in American knees and I don't work in American Rangers.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. You'll have to explain to me if he's in range, out of range, because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think, hold on a second. I think his total cholesterol looks good. Let's see. Cholesterol level ranges.
Regards, yes, citrus bergamot, great product for increasing HDL, as well as using stuff like krill oil and fish oils will work. If you've gone from a plant-based to a more ovarian diet, ovarian, that's the wrong word, isn't it? What is the word? Can't remember.
I like variant. It makes sense, at least.
I said ovarian, but that's the wrong word. No, I don't know why I said that. I don't know where that's come from. Anyway, God, I'm fucked today. My brain's not working at all. Obviously, you introduce animal products in there, you're going to get a rise in cholesterol levels. It's just going to happen. You're going to have more triglycerides floating around in your bloodstream, and your cholesterol levels are going to alter. We always sort of look at LDL as being bad, and it's not actually the case. There are various, quite varied different types of LDL, and some are good and some are bad.
Yeah.
So it's not always an accurate measure, but for simplicity versions, we just go LDL bad, HDL good. If you go from plant-based to a meat-based diet, you are going to see a rise in your cholesterol levels. Your total cholesterol will go up, your LDL will go up. It's going to happen. There's nothing that you're going to do that changes that.
Yeah.
If you're using a pro-hormone, you are effectively using steroids. Don't con yourself. You know, they are effectively an oral steroid. And as a result, they are potentially going to be more impacting on your cholesterol levels than an injectable like testosterone would be. What I'm a little confused about, did Dante suggest that he runs a TRT at an elevated dose?
I don't think he said anything about the dose, just to pursue TRT.
I thought he said something about being elevated.
Oh, basically that he could maintain elevated test levels continually versus just doing andro and bouncing it up on cycle.
Are we talking elevated as in elevated but within range? Or do you know if he meant elevated as elevated above range?
Well, he said pursue it with your doctor. So he's meaning, he means higher than his current, assuming he currently has low test, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if he has low test, then obviously he should seek treatment for that, without doubt.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the low test won't be helping his cholesterol levels either.
Oh, that's a good point. I just, as a side note, I didn't find it because I have a hard time trying to think, talk, and look shit up at the same time. But I can tell you, so his cholesterol, what did he say, was like, it went up to 195. Under 200, I believe, is the normal range. And then for his HDL, it's still on the low side. It was 25. It's gone up to 29. And I think you want to have it more like 50 would be ideal. My cholesterol runs on the lower side. I'm at around 25 to 30. Depending, but I've always been there. So, I mean, as a rough idea, that's what we're talking about.
Then I would suggest that it depends on which citrus bergamot he is currently using and if there is range in there for an increase in that dose. If he maintains a more healthier testosterone level, which in turn will maintain a more healthier estrogen level, then he's going to have positive impacts on his cholesterol levels from that as well. If he's on low test, then trying to deal with that using a pro hormone is counterproductive.
Sure.
And potentially all he's going to do is actually worsen the problem long term, and he'd be much better seeking medical advice and getting on a proper controlled TRT.
Yeah.
If he considers running TRT at elevated levels, as in above range, then that's only going to be a recipe for problems further down the line long term. Unfortunately, TRT is going to increase his LDL levels slightly because obviously you're not going to be using cholesterol anymore as a product to create hormones.
Yeah.
And at the moment, he has some basic hormone production. But that is far less impacting on his overall general health than the fact that he's running at 12. So I would go TRT. I agree with Dante completely on that.
Yeah, I do too. I've seen that before where guys are like, hey, I have low test. I'm thinking about running a cycle. And it's like, well, you're going to be 12 weeks down the road. You'll be in the same place you were, you know.
If not worse.
Yeah, yeah.
If not worse. There seems to be, for some reason, and it seems to crop up quite often, and I don't know where it's coming from, that I've got low tests, so if I run a cycle and then come back off, it will fix my low test problem. And it's like, no. But it's amazing how often this comes up. You know, it's not something that only crops up now and again. It crops up regularly that guys with low tests think that if they go on cycle, when they come off, their tests will be recovered. And it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's coming from, but it's something that crops up on a regular basis. I'll hear that very, very often.
All right. I've got another one here. This is straight from the live feed. He says, question, is it possible that someone can get minimum gains while using compounds like Trend, Deca, EQ, but grow a lot more on higher doses of test only?
Yes.
Let's see. He says, a bit of context. I've always used test plus another compound since my first cycle, which was 500 test milligrams per week. I now feel like Deca, Trend impact my digestion, stopping me from utilizing the nutrition I've ingested, therefore not building muscle. Planning next cycle to be just 900 milligrams of test. Sounds like he answered his own question, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed this before at the point where drug toxicity becomes a negative.
Yeah, yeah.
And if your drug protocols are impacting your digestive system, then you're not going to grow if you can't digest food and you can't eat food. So if your appetite is screwed because you're taking Panadrol or you're taking Tren, then what is the point if you can't eat, you can't grow?
Yeah.
You know, I can employ 43 million brickies, but if I've got no bricks, they ain't building me anything.
Brickies. I like that word. That's a guy who builds stuff with bricks, huh?
Yes, it is.
I like that.
Well done, Scott. So, you know, if you can't get the food in, you're not going to sustain growth. So if your drug protocols are restricting your food intake, then your drug protocols are pointless.
Yeah.
So completely agree. Yeah, it's not the... All things being equal, you know, the more, to an extent, the more compound, the more growth. But obviously, there's so many different variables and factors in this that you've got to look at your nutrition, you've got to look at your food intake, you've got to look at the effectiveness of your training. And I mean, I've been at levels with compounds where it's actually started to impact on my ability to train hard.
Sure, I felt that myself, yeah.
And so as a result, I've not got as much out of it as I should do. So there is a point where it becomes too much, and that's individual to people, unfortunately. That threshold is individual to you, but you know, when you start turning your body toxic, you will start to restrict progression.
Dude, I wish I knew this stuff years ago, because my attitude in the past was you just tolerate it, you know, like, oh, well, you're going to run Trend. It's going to be a rough ride. You're going to have a lot of insomnia. It's going to be, you know, uncomfortable. Whereas if I thought about it the way I do now, man, and the way I try to lead people is that if you can make a cycle, or just really, we'll just say a plan in general, comfortable, if you can make the body less stressed, you know, that's where you make your best progress, right?
Yeah, there will be a point when you push to certain extremes where it not being pleasant is just unavoidable.
Yeah.
You know, but that's when, but you are really starting to push extremes of your development when you get to those sort of levels. But yeah, I mean, the other problem as well is it's very difficult mentally, or so to say, it's very easy mentally to fall down a rabbit hole of more drugs mean more growth.
You need to feel it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you got to feel it for like Clen. You've got to be shaking like crazy or it's not working.
And it's very easy to disappear down a hole when it comes to drug use. Oh, well, if I'm growing this on this, if I take more, I'll grow bigger.
Yeah, sure.
And lose sight of the problems that it causes. And because you get so used to feeling like shit, it just becomes normal.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest cycles and my largest size, there wasn't a day went by when I didn't feel like fucking absolute crap. But that was part of living at that size. And then you start to struggle to differentiate between, do I feel like shit because I weigh so much and I'm so big and I'm eating so much and all of this stress is on my body? Or do I feel like shit because I'm taking too many drugs? Or do I feel like shit because there's a problem? And unfortunately, the nature of us at that point is that we will seek results and advice that confirm that what we're doing is okay.
Yeah.
And we'll discount things that point to the fact that what we're doing is potentially wrong. It's just human nature, is that? That's typical cognitive dissonance, you know what I mean? I'll listen to the advice that suits my agenda rather than listen to the advice that doesn't.
Sure. Yeah, no, I can relate to that completely, you know, that it doesn't have to be that way. I'm looking around here to see if we had any other questions. I can't, I feel like we did. I feel like I'm missing something, Dave. Does that mean I'm ill-prepared?
Scott, you've been missing something for a very long time.
I was missing you in my life, Dave. And now that you're here, see, here's a text from my mom. I don't think she asked any questions on the show.
What's mom saying? Go on. What's mom saying?
Let's see. She actually was exposed to somebody who had coronavirus.
I thought you meant someone had exposed themselves to it, like a flasher.
No, not this week at least.
All right.
Now, I think that was it, man. Oh, I do have a picture here. I want you guys to see this. This is a picture of, take a guess who this is. If you guys can guess, we should have a contest. Who's this man in the mask?
Oh, God.
He looks, doesn't he look like he would be like a bad guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something? Like the Turtles would have to fight this
guy. I want to know more about Mummy Scott. I want to know more about Mrs. McNally.
You know, she lifted weights for a long time.
Did she?
Yes, her and my dad both were really into fitness when I was a kid. So I used to go to the gym with them. And they were not into like bodybuilding, but my mom was in pretty good shape at one point. My dad was too, but he was always like, he wasn't into like building muscle. He played competitive ping pong, so he was like a real skinny guy. But all of his friends were into bodybuilding and powerlifting. So I was exposed to that at a young age. Oh, we got a good one here. This is from Walter. Let me see if I can pull this up over at the Advices group. So he had a question. This is a good one for you, Dave, because it's about growing muscle.
I can see you as a ping pong player.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm not my dad, Dave.
No, I'm not saying you are your dad, but I can see you as a ping pong player. I think you should have followed the family tradition.
Would you want to play some table tennis with me?
I'm shit at that.
Yeah?
I just don't have the hand-eye coordination.
Really? Huh.
No, I'm garbage.
Well, maybe garbage. After you hit your boxing bag for a while.
Yeah, but that's big. I mean, that's, you know, like this. That, I can't miss that. Ping pong's like that. And I've only got a little bat. I need a bat about this big. I can't play. I'm shit at tennis, shit at badminton, shit at cricket. I just, baseball, crap. Just can't hit things with a bat.
George White wanted to impress upon you too, or impress upon me, I think, that it is pronounced missile.
Missile.
Okay. Let's see. So here's his situation. Walter is working toward trying to gain as much muscle as he can. He's like 250 pounds now. He says, I'm currently cutting for two shows, but back in my off season, I used to add maybe 50 grams of carbs or fat, and my weight wouldn't budge. I'd look fuller or maybe gain a pound or two. Then about a week later, I'm back down to the previous weight.
Then add more.
Yeah?
That's quite simple. Add more. Okay. Small doses, but add your 50 grams. Nothing increases. Then look at adding an extra 10 grams to three or four meals. Again, you'll probably find that you'll get a pound, a couple of pound increase, and then a week or 2 weeks later, it'll start to settle back down. It reduces again. Add more again. And you'll continually have this fight against your metabolic rate until you get to the point where it will just tip over, and then you will start to progress.
Huh.
It's a ball ache, but it's just a case of add a bit, leave it, add a bit, leave it, add a bit, leave it, and you just keep going.
Yeah.
Some people will suggest that you add fats to start to slow the digestive tract down a little bit. That can be a double-edged sword, so just be wary of that. It's worth a go, but just be wary. It can start to bog a lot of things down as well. And obviously, if you get into the point where, you know what, I can't fucking eat anything else,
yeah,
then you need to start looking at your training and reducing your calorie expenditure.
Ooh, so what are you saying? Get more out of less? Try to reduce the volume, get more intensity out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it might be that you drop down to literally only 3 days a week or 4 days a week.
Okay.
Just to give you that progressive overload with calories that will cause you to gain weight.
Okay. Yeah, because I think he was talking about pushing his – okay, he says here, he says he was talking about pushing his carbs up really high, like 1,000. But I think he's only – he said would 200 to 400 grams of carbs be okay? Eating 600 grams was a cakewalk. Training hard makes me lose – well, he's saying more. We'll cover the carbs first. So how fast would you increase? Let me ask you that, Dave. If, say, a guy's getting 400 grams of carbs – and he wanted to grow, would you add 400 more all at once, or would you?
No.
Okay.
No, I would probably go 40 to 50 at an increase of actual grams of carbs, of actual macros of carbs. So that, depending on your food source, that would be 40 to 50 grams of rice, you know, 250 grams of potatoes. So it depend on what you were using as your carb source as to how much of an increase in volume of food that would be.
Okay.
Give it a week. 2 weeks, see where you're sitting. If it's still not moving, add more again. I remember having a client that was a bit like this. We'd put food into him. He would gain a couple of pound, and then by the end of the week, and he would feel full.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. So we'd increase. We might put an extra 10 grams of rice across 5 meals, so 50 grams of rice in total for the day, and he'd be like. Say the increase happened on a Monday, it'd be like, fucking hell, I'm stuffed, I can't eat anymore.
Yeah.
Tuesday would be the same. Wednesday, he'd start saying, you know what, I feel all right. By Friday, he'd be hungry.
Okay.
And his weight would have come back down again. So we pushed it up again, and we'd get the same process, and the same process, and the same process. But what we did find was that 6-8 weeks into it, he only gained 2 pounds, but he was noticeably leaner.
Really?
And it was just a case of continually pushing the food and pushing the food and pushing the food. And then we got to a point where he was still full all the time. It's like, I can't eat anymore. So our only choice to go then was, right, okay, let's reduce training.
Mm.
And it ended up, he was only training 3 days a week, but he grew.
Okay.
But they were very HIIT style, you know, intense workouts, and they had to be to trigger that growth process. But it was the only way we could get the calories into him. His metabolic rate just adapted, constantly speeding up every time we increase more food.
I wonder if there is something in the training, because he just said training hard makes me lose weight. So what's the question then? Do you not train, you know, if that's what your mindset is, does that mean that you're then going to not train hard in order to maintain weight? Because I feel like that would not be the answer to grow muscle regardless, right?
No, you still need to train intensely. You just need to limit how long you train intensely for.
Okay, yeah.
And you find this goes two way with people. You know, you can, the other end to this is that you get people that you end up having to get to train a lot, but at the same time, you push a lot of food in.
Yeah.
And the result is, though they're training very, very frequently and they're constantly sore, they grow and they maintain condition, even though they're now on very, very high calories compared to what they would normally do, but they would train less frequent. Yeah. But you get accelerated growth because you're stimulating growth more often and you're recovering more often. So as a result, you grow quicker. But yeah, if once you get to your limit of your calorie intake, then you've got to start looking at reducing your calorie output.
Okay. Okay. Looks like he's 5'10", 250. I mean, he's got some good muscle on him, but he definitely, he also, you know, he's got a good sized frame on him too. He could, I don't think that 280, 290 would be crazy talk for this guy, but I bet you, man, based off everything he's saying, he'd have to eat a Dave Crossland style diet to get there.
But just do it in steps, do it in stages. And if you get to the point where, you know what, I just can't eat anymore, then fine. We just have to reduce the frequency at which you train.
Okay.
Or the volume at which you train, you know, and it may be that what we're going to look at is doing 10 sets for a major body part, 6 sets for a minor body part, but we'll hit it twice a week.
Okay.
Or we'll hit it twice every 3 weeks.
Yeah, he's training 5 days a week now.
Depends what his split is and what his volume is.
5 days a week with 1 day off and 1 day of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So that sounds like a lot of output, right?
Well, that BJ day is going to be a huge amount of output, particularly for a 250-pound man.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
You know, MMA, from a point of view, calorie burn and muscle engagement is huge.
And he does high-volume training.
Look at intensity work.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You could probably gain more using maybe even the same amount of food then, right?
Yeah, just be more efficient with your calorie expenditure. The easiest way to explain this is that calories are money that you spend on nutrition. Yeah?
Okay.
So your energy output dictates your budget of calories.
Okay.
So if your energy output on a daily basis is 3,000 calories and you're wanting to gain size, then you're looking at a daily budget of 3,500 calories.
Okay.
So you have to be efficient in where you spend your calories on food. So if you ate a packet of, in the UK, they're called hobnobs. I don't even know if you have them in America. But a packet of hobnob biscuits is 1,200 calories. So if I spend my 3,500 daily budget and I buy 1,200, I spend 1,200 of that on biscuits.
Yeah.
Then I've only left myself 2,300 to spend on nutrition.
Okay.
And as a result of that, I'm probably going to be under my nutritional needs for the day, even though I hit my calorie needs for the day. So I need to spend sensibly with my budget so I get the optimum nutrition I can get for my 3,500 calories.
Yeah.
The same thing happens when we look at calorie expenditure. If I'm burning 3,000 calories a day, or I'm burning 3,000 calories a day, I need to make sure I burn that on productive things.
Okay.
So if I can get into the gym and stimulate muscle growth with 10 sets, why would I then, bearing in mind that I have to buy this nutrition, that costs me money, and I have to use this nutrition, and I have a limited capability of what I can actually eat, i.e. what I can consume in calories, why then would I spend an extra 500 calories or an extra 1,000 calories on doing 20 sets if I can get the job done in 12?
Sure, absolutely.
Because I'm being more efficient with my budget.
Yeah.
So you've got to be efficient with your budget when you spend calories on food, because you want to buy premium food for the calories that you're using in your import. And at the same time, you want to be efficient in your calorie expenditure to stimulate muscle growth.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be wasting calories by burning them on non-essential work. And that's not to say you don't do cardio, because cardio is part of your essential work, and it's part of essential in keeping your heart healthy. But don't waste time on fluff work in a gym when it comes to weight workout if it's not going to be productive in stimulating muscle growth.
George White added, as a good example here, he said James Hollingshead often goes to one maximal set per exercise in the off season.
James does all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I've seen James train, and that's not quite accurate, because he will do a couple of warm-ups to achieve that one maximal set.
Sure, which probably would, you know, that they're definitely, they're there, they're burning calories, but I get the point though. Like the way you could say Dorian did more than, you know, his actual.
James may use 5 or 6 exercises for a body part where I'm more of a 3 exercises for a body part. And he'll do a couple of warm ups, then he'd hit his all out set, his working set, where he'd do drop reps and everything else. So yeah, very hit style, but with probably a few more exercises thrown in than the Dorian used to use.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I know he's training with Luke now, so I don't know what their setup with training partners, but I know he used to train with 2 training partners.
Yeah.
So that he had the assistance he needed there to push those sets where he wanted them to go.
And you know, George says, which I get where he's coming from, that warm-ups aren't sets, but if you're doing enough, you're still burning calories, so you know, if you're doing 12 reps with, you know, we'll say 60%, we'll even say 50%, 40% of what you would be using, it may not be effective for growing muscle, but just to walk to the gym, you're burning calories, you know, just to do, I think that's where Dave's coming from. It's not necessarily like this is a muscle building set, but yeah, if you're doing a bunch of fluff work, you're still burning calories even doing that fluff work. If you take, like for me, I'll say that I only do 2 working sets now, but it does take me my first exercise 25 minutes to get to that first set. And I'm definitely, there are calories burning in there. Are they burning as much as if I was doing, you know, high volume work? Probably not, but you know, it is something.
Yeah. I mean, my general setup is 6 sets for the first exercise because it takes me that number of sets to get up to my working weights, or it used to when I was training heavy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going from an empty bar to a 5-plate bench in 2 sets.
Yeah.
Because my other pec would be hanging off more than the one that already is. So it will take me 6 sets to get to my working set, or 5 sets at least. But once I'm warm, I'll get to those working sets much quicker. So my second exercise would be 4 sets in total with a working set. And my third exercise would be 4 sets in total, maybe 5 at a push, depending on how I felt.
Yeah.
With my working sets. And I would have 1 heavy working set per exercise and 1 lighter, higher rep working set per exercise.
Yeah, it's like when I talked to Dusty about the amount of warm-ups he does, he said it depends too. And like if he's like deadlifts may take me a half hour to get to what he's going to work with, whereas pull-ups are, you know, obviously not. You know, you can get into a pull-up a lot quicker. So I think it all depends, you know.
Biceps, you can probably be warm and ready to move some maximum weight with a bicep within 2 or 3 sets.
Sure, sure.
Where if you're doing a 500-pound pull-down, it's all relative to the weight you're moving as well.
Yeah.
You're not going to get into that sort of – I mean, I worked on getting bigger jumps. So my bench press would start with, say, an empty bar.
Yeah.
Just to get the setup more than anything else. And then I might go to I tried going up at like a plate and a quarter, a plate and a half jumps. And I found it was too much. The maximum I could jump at was a plate a set.
Hmm.
So, you know, a plate a side. So up 40 kilo each set. Whereas on other exercises, I found I could jump a little bit more. I could go up at 50 kilo a set.
Yeah. And, you know, too, I know Walter's not the youngest guy. He's not in his 20s or so. He's probably more like, you know, closer to our age. So I'm sure age plays a factor in how much warm up you need.
But it's about being efficient. It's about every calorie you consume is spent wisely.
Yeah.
And you're not wasting it on shit. And in the same way, every calorie you expend is spent wisely.
Sure.
And that it becomes a balance of what you need to warm up so you're not risking injury to get to a weight or an intensity in a workout that's effective for building muscle mass. And that will change from person to person and depending on how you train and styles you train at.
Yeah.
But it's just about being effective and just not wasting sets. Some people need more sets to mentally get themselves into a workout.
Sure.
And I mean, that was very common when I trained as well. You know, the first couple of sets were basically us fucking about. And it would be like, you know, how's your day been, what you've been up to, and sort of stuff like that. By the time we were getting into the 3rd and 4th set, we were starting to get serious. And by the time we hit the 5th set, that was it. Head was down, no bullshit, hard work. We didn't speak again unless it was to encourage or insult each other to improve our performances, but there was no chit chat anymore.
Yeah, it was, and it was, And I think too, because we're getting some comments in, and that overall, back to like the main point that I think you're making is that, like you just said, you have to just be wise with, if you're not growing, I mean, he's a big dude, and he did say he is 45, so he's about my age, a little bit older. If you aren't growing and you do want to look at your training, and you're looking at where you're burning your calories, obviously, like he's doing the jiu-jitsu, that's going to play a role, mm-hmm. like you were saying. And, the more if he's doing high volume training, that's obviously probably going to be more of, you're going to keep your heart rate up. I mean, just think about it. If you keep your heart rate up, for a 2 hour, I used to do 3 hour workouts, when I trained with Shelby Starnes. We trained back for 2.5 hours. Legs was easily a 3 hour workout. And I loved those workouts. But man, you burn calories. Just like when I worked for the pop company, man. I was on my feet lifting stuff all day long. I could eat so much food and still not grow. So, looking at what you're doing, how much you're burning, in the day, if you're trying to gain muscle, I think that's a really good point that you make.
It's all about efficiency. It's all about how you spend your money. It's all about being cost effective.
Yeah.
Cost effective with your calorie expenditure, cost effective with your calorie intake. And the more cost effective you are, the more bang you'll get for your buck when it comes to the food you eat and the training you do. And that all comes into being efficient in how you engage a muscle as well. Being able to get in there and make that muscle work effectively with the weight it's using as sooner as possible. And that all comes from honing your craft of training.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll jump topics here to one more question just to keep us moving along here. This is also from the live feed. Brandon says, just tuned in. My question is, why do I instantly get indigestion from Tren? Is there something I can do about it?
Yeah, don't take Tren.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, right. I'm not trying to be dismissive, Brandon, or trying to insult you in any way, but if stabbing yourself in the eye hurts, you don't do it.
Yeah.
So if Tren is causing digestion issues, heartburn, then don't take it.
Yeah.
You don't need to take. Why do people think that Tren is this be-all and end-all when it comes to drugs?
It is pretty. Face it, Dave. It is pretty freaking amazing. There is that.
It's a powerful drug. But like we said earlier, if a drug is restricting your ability to grow because you can't fucking eat, don't take the drug.
Yeah.
There's other alternatives. It's not the be all and end all. It doesn't have to be Tren.
Like oral Tren, that's available too.
Yeah. generally speaking, Tren is a combination of acid and liver stress. Hmm. You'll find you'll get digestive issues when your stress gets liver. Tren is an incredibly toxic drug. It does create a lot of stress on the body, and as a result, your digestive is impacted. Your digestion is impacted. Your acid levels increase, and it's difficult to combat. It is difficult to combat. Personally, I wouldn't bother using it rather than going to all the effort of trying to control it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough, man.
That's my honest answer. You don't need Tren to build a big and powerful physique. You can do it without.
Well, dose too. Let's look at that. I mean,
there's argument there as well. If you're using 600 mg Tren and it's causing stomach problems, try 400. Lower the dose and see how that works. But we do this, and I've done it myself. I have to take this drug because it makes me grow.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, when you look at the bigger picture, it's actually restricting your growth.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no single drug, I think, that is mandatory,
No. I was ramming huge amounts of growth hormone into my system, huge amounts of insulin into my system, because I truly believed it was necessary to make me grow. And what I didn't do was stop and actually look and say, is it making me grow?
Mm.
Is this being productive? Am I progressing? And when I finished it all and looked back, it was like, actually, no. I've not actually progressed that much through this period of time, despite this huge amount of drug use.
I can tell you a mistake that I've made, Dave, which relates right to that, is you get so wrapped up when you're learning about what these different compounds are and what their supposed effects are that you start associating your results with a compound versus your results with your actual results, if that makes sense. Like, you start thinking like, well, I need the trend because this is what I want to achieve. You're no longer looking at, you don't get the satisfaction out of the result. You get the satisfaction out of knowing you're taking the drug that should be giving you the result.
You stop being objective.
Yeah.
You start to buy into, well, trend is the most powerful injectable there is. It gives the greatest result. I have to use trend. If I'm using trend, I'm going to grow. You know, or Jay Cutler said, the only difference with growth and the only rule to growth is take as much as you can fucking afford, because the more you take, the bigger you'll get. And you start to buy into these concepts and believe them. And you stop actually looking at what you're doing and going, well, have I grown? Am I any bigger, heavier, stronger, leaner than I was at this time last year before I started taking all these drugs?
Yeah.
Have I progressed? And it's awful because at the same time, hello, you. There's a dog looking at me. Just seen his face appear underneath my desk and he's like, But it's so difficult to look at yourself and go, you know what? I've spent £3,000 on growth hormone and steroids in the last 12 months, and actually, I haven't progressed that much.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult conversation to have with yourself. And it's not a pleasant one. In fact, it's fucking awful. But if you're going to progress and you're going to get better, you need to be regularly having these conversations.
Yeah.
You need to be regularly being objective, looking at yourself and being self-critical and analyzing, am I bigger? Am I stronger? Has my training improved? Has my gym list gone up? Am I carrying more muscle mass? Do I look better in the mirror? Do I look better on photographs in comparison to what I've done? And if you've done 12 months and you haven't progressed, then something's not working.
Yeah.
If you're standing on stage the following year at 180, the same as you did the year before, in the same sort of condition, well, then you haven't progressed, have you?
Yeah.
So summit's not working.
Yeah. I would say for trend, you know, if there's so many variables, like if he is using a high dose, you can use less. And, you know, if it comes down to it, you can survive without it. But I definitely would aim for, I think that we can get a lot more out of it. You know, when I first started bodybuilding with compounds like this, I just went by what the boards had said because I didn't know better. But then when I actually knew people, I got a coach, for instance, he was like, no, cut that in half, you know? And I found that I could get really good results with the right training and the right diet, you know, in a lot less than I thought I needed previously.
I agree completely. And probably feel better for it as well.
Yeah.
And enjoy the process more.
Yeah. Well, and got results, you know?
So, you know, you progress better, you feel better, you enjoy it more, and you're not falling out with the missus and she doesn't think you're an arsehole, and you're not sleeping all night, and you're not drenching yourself with sweat every time you go to bed. Oh, and God. The whole thing is better.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's call it a day here. We got a lot of stuff out. Dave, are you going to do any kind of exercise since you don't have your heavy bag? You're going to get up, you can do some shadow boxing.
I am going to do the exercise of lifting the fork from the plate to my mouth.
Dave.
I am in training for a new sport. I've taken up sumo wrestling.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I want to see some video of that. Let's get that up.
I'm going to be like all these people that say they're bodybuilders and never step on stage. Well, I was one of them as well, so I can't really tell that one. Yeah. All these people that are going to compete and that's why they're doing this, that, and the other and never actually do, I'm going to be the same version in sumo wrestling. So I am going to get incredibly fat because I'm going to be a sumo wrestler, but I'm just never quite going to make it.
Yeah. Well, we'll just say we got to get you the diaper.
It's politics, mate. That's why I can never compete as a sumo wrestler. They just don't allow people with red coloring to compete.
All right. Well, with all that said, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. Head on over to crosslands.org.uk. You could check out Dave over there, reach out to him for some coaching, go from 250 to 290, and of course check out our sponsor truenutrition.com. You can use our code advices. Everything's third-party tested, high quality supplements. Guys, we'll see you soon.